Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Latest news reports have Prime Minister Ismail Sabri Yaakob presenting his cabinet list to the palace tomorrow. Nevertheless, social media is full of purported lists of the cabinet lineup, and ahead of his announcement, many have come forward to lobby names for different ministerial positions. UMNO Youth is pushing for the party's deputy president, Mohamed Hassan, for the position of finance minister. Let's find out why. Datuk Dr. Ashraf Wajdi Dusuki, the chief of UMNO Youth, joins us now. Ashraf, good evening. Thank you for being on the show tonight. For months, there have been criticisms that the Perikatan National Cabinet was bloated and incompetent, especially in key ministries, led by the wrong people, especially, for instance, the portfolios of finance and health and education and trade and industry. I'm just wondering what you and UMNO Youth would like to see in this cabinet lineup.
Yeah, thank you, Melissa. Actually, I did propose at the initial stage, prior to the establishment of this new government, that we need some form of a wartime cabinet. It's just like what the UK has experienced in several major events, such as World War, Brexit, Falkland War, and so on. What it meant is just to have a small and a very focused cabinet that addressing the issue that we have in hand at the moment, basically the COVID-19, try to accelerate vaccination so that the country can immediately achieve the herd immunity, and more importantly, stabilizing the economy and to assist those citizens who are in dire need at this time.
So if I could just jump in there, it seems like you're on the same page with former UMNO Federal Minister Saleh Said Krua, who also wants a very lean cabinet. And he does have two other stipulations, like you said, focus on the crisis, but also to be very short in terms of its duration, to take the country into a general election in less than a year's time. What do you make of Saleh Said Krua's suggestion?
Yeah, I concur to his idea as well, because we have to face the fact that the country cannot prolong this political instability. We have to admit the fact that when time comes, we have to give back the mandate to the people to have a strong and a true mandate of a government elected by the people, i.e. in general election, GE15. So, but the problem, in order for us to achieve that objective, we need to make sure that the problem at hand, basically the pandemic that we are still facing, we have to make sure that we achieve the herd community and try to reduce the COVID-19 that is currently facing and people are suffering today. So,
right.
In order to do that, we have to be focused in our in whatever we do today.
Well, dealing with the public health crisis is one, but also the economic fallout. That means that the finance minister position will be very important. Why have you proposed Mohamed Hassan for the position of finance minister? What makes you think that Mohamed Hassan would excel in this position?
You know, obviously, Dato' Sri Mat Hassan, or popularly known as Tok Mat, is an obvious candidate for such, for me, a sensitive and important position. Of course, he has significant...
Why is he an obvious candidate?
First of all, as a politician and former chief executive of state government, Tok Mat Hassan has the empathy needed to grasp the hardship and challenges faced by the rakyat nowadays. I always mention that we need a minister that can understand and really relate to the pulse of the people. This requires someone who are, elected by the people. And we can see, for example, today, people desperately need, for example, a moratorium without the accrued interest. People are desperately need to withdraw their ETF through iCitra. But why these people are demanding this? Most of these people are coming from T20 and M40 groups who were before, to a certain extent, neglected in whatever support from the government. For example, Bantuan Khas COVID, when we demanded that M40 need to be also included, and the government just announced 250 ringgit for the M40. But the actual fact that during this pandemic, most of these people, T20 and B40, T20 and N40, they turn out to be B40. Hello?
Yeah, but Ashok, can I ask you this? You know, the previous government, the Perikatan National Government, was one that had many UMNO leaders in it. Why wasn't it possible then to make these kinds of policy recommendations? Well, UMNO had key portfolios.
Okay, we have to realize the fact that the government before and today is not a solid coalition. It comprises of many political parties with different ideologies. And of course, to a certain extent, they are having a contradictory to each other. So in that case, you can see, for example, when we proposed the idea of improving the 10, which I described as Tuntutan Rakyat, what we summarized from the Rakyat's demand. And most of this demand actually relates to the real suffering of the people. When I mentioned this to the former minister, I relate to him that why this T20, M40, who now becomes B40, they were, to a certain extent, being neglected. Why? Because most of the time, the focus is on the B40. And the data in inland revenue is outdated. That's why one of the things in our demand, we ask the government to update the data. And not only that, like moratorium, we have discussed with the banks. Actually, there is a need to have a bold action from the government, especially the Minister of Finance before, to standardize and harmonize the practice and the way how the banks actually offering the moratorium, not just to allow the banks to offer according to what they feel that is important.
We have a little time left before we have to go to break. And I want to ask you to address some of the rumors that Gombak MP Azmin Ali is front-runner as next Deputy Prime Minister. And I'm just wondering, there's been intense lobbying for this position, including threats of pulling out of the coalition if not given posts. How much room does Ismail Sabri have to manoeuvre this balance?
Yeah, to be more pragmatic and practical. That's why, of course, for UMNO Youth, when we propose the idea of wartime cabinet, actually the idea is to have just a small one. But, of course, in reality, you need to satisfy all the demands from different parties. That's why there is an issue whether you are still going to, retain the old cabinet. And this is what people are saying. A wine in a different bottle. So that's why I think this is a thing that which a very challenging for Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri between ideal and reality. And between
Is Azmin Ali the front runner?
I'm not sure because I'm not in a position to speculate that. But of course, anyone who is going to be appointed as Deputy Prime Minister, there will be people who are not going to satisfy to the appointment. So for me, if I were the Prime Minister, I would suggest put aside the appointment of Deputy Prime Minister. Just we move forward with whoever that we appoint as a minister and cabinet. And I hope it will not be a bloated cabinet like before.
Sharad, do you have a question?
You answered my question. I think we all hope there isn't a bloated cabinet. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ashraf Wajidi Dusuki of UMNO Youth. There, we're going to go for a quick break, but stay tuned. We'll come back and speak to Segambut MP Hannah Yeo. We'll be back. Hello, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. Newly sworn in Prime Minister Ismail Sabri Yaakob is being asked to consider new approaches to governance when putting together his new government. Sugabut MP and former Deputy Minister of Women, Family and Community Development Hannah Yeo has proposed a new ministry, one that is dedicated solely for children. She joins us now to tell us why. Hannah, good evening. Thank you for being on the show. Before we get to your specific proposal, Hannah, can we address what you think a cabinet during a crisis should look like?
I think this has to be a cabinet that is flexible enough to be able to think out of the box, hardworking and competent. And they must be engaging stakeholders outside. Unfortunately, this is not a new government. This is just about changing the prime minister. We are now looking at the possibility of backbenchers moving to the front bench. But the entire composition, 114 of them are the exact same people who have been giving support to the Perikatan National Government. So if we are looking at new ideas, I do not think new ideas will come out, because usually in your honeymoon period, your first 12 months, that's when you really want to impress the voters. But if you look at their performance since Sheraton move, I don't think it has been encouraging. So I don't have a lot of hope that things will be different.
Hannah, there's just been a report suggesting that Dr. Mahathir feels that an early vote of confidence might not be good. It might actually lead to a collapse of Ismail Sabri's government even before he begins. What do you make of Dr. Mahathir's suggestion? Because both the monarch as well as many other voices suggest an early resolution to the confidence issue.
I think Tun Dr. Mahathir has been known to speak his mind freely, and that is his opinion. But as far as we are concerned, we know that when we enter Parliament again, there would be a vote of confidence as instructed by the royal family, by the King.
Okay, so let's talk about the incoming cabinet. This is a cabinet that's being put together in a time of crisis. Both a public health crisis and an economic crisis, and also a political crisis. I want to ask you about this specific proposal for a ministry, a new ministry to be established dedicated solely to children. Why, Hannah, do you think that this would be a good time to establish a new ministry, especially when we had criticisms that the previous administration, the previous cabinet, was bloated?
Let's look at the fact that Perikatan National Government has appointed many ministers and deputy ministers into their cabinet, right, previously. But now, I think we all know that they have a very slim majority. And as a result, we know that the Prime Minister is being held at ransom by a lot of different component groups within Perikatan National, wanting Deputy Prime Minister, wanting Home Ministry. And as a result, I think he is going to be torn, and he will very likely fill all these positions with the same group of people. Now, when I suggested the Ministry of Children, it did not come out of nowhere. When we were in Putrajaya, we actually discovered that the current agency looking after child rights is parked with Social Welfare Department, Jabatan Kebajikan Masyarakat, and they look after disaster relief, they look after welfare benefits, and you know, they have a small department called Bahagian Kanak-Kanak to look after children issues. Now, we know that the population of children in Malaysia is 30%. In fact, in Kuala Lumpur, as of last year, it's already reaching 40%. So this is a big group of people. And if we are looking at nation building, we know that violations against children, if we don't deal with it today, we're going to pay the price as a nation in years to come. So children today in 10 years old, very quickly in 8 years, will become a teenager. And some of them will eventually get married and have a family of their own. So if they have all these issues, sexual violations, all these things not tackled and not done, it's going to come and bite us back in future. The Prime Minister
I ask you about whether a Ministry of Children would include their educational needs? Because one of the biggest casualties of the pandemic in Malaysia, unlike some countries, has been schooling, and, you know, early education has been sacrificed on the altar of well, I mean, depending on where you stand, either incompetence or dithering or whatever you want to call it, the problem seems to be whether education is part of this, of the remit of this Ministry of Children, or is it separate?
That's right. You see, the Ministry of Education currently, they have the biggest block of budget given to them, but they do not look after early childhood education. At the moment, it's parked with the Women Ministry. And during our time, we actually called for a meeting chaired by the Deputy Prime Minister and also our Women Minister, looking at restructuring that whole thing. So if we have a Ministry of Children, Ministry of Children will look after the restructuring of early childhood education. For far too long, this nation has always looked at issues related to children as babysitting issues. And as a result, we always put it aside and we do not see it as important. So to now, right now, other countries, like you have rightly pointed out, they are looking at 2 years old, 3 years old, early childhood education as, you know, the greatest developmental point for a child. And we do not look at it like that. And we are continuously being, this whole children rights and children issues are being parked under a small department in JKM, Social Welfare Department. And this must change. And that's why I propose this. While the Prime Minister is now looking at all, you know, all the requests coming in from all his component parties, I think it does not hurt for us to speak up and to say, you really need a strong minister to anchor this ministry if you do not want to pay the price in years to come.
Do you think that there's political will, that there are champions for this segment of the population, for children in particular, within the current administration?
I'm very hopeful after I saw the resignation of Dato' Sri Azalina. Now, I'll tell you why. During our time in Putrajaya, we all knew that Yeoh Bee-in took on the role of three men. I feel that right now, Dato' Sri Azalina, now she's no longer a deputy speaker, so she can be a front runner in being picked for important ministry. Today, Wanita Harapan has issued a statement to say that the home ministry should be held by a woman. I tell you why, because a lot of time we look at home ministry as the prized possession given to very powerful senior men in any political party. But there's a lot of issues concerning citizenship, concerning marriages and divorces, and all these are part under Jabatan Pendaftaran Negara. Stateless children, these are core issues that must be tackled. Unfortunately, we have not seen any home minister dealing with this issue. So I feel it would be good for the Prime Minister to pick Azalina as the new home minister. And if they can't, then, you know, she has to be law minister or a women minister. Preferably, if she can do all three, that would be wonderful, because she can. She is very consultative. As a deputy speaker, her track record shows she has engaged the opposition. She looked into prison reforms, chairing committee, and even the select committee for women. She included us into those discussions.
Excellent. That's wonderful to hear. Thank you so much for your time. That was Gambut MP Hannah Yeoh on the show. We're going to take another quick break, but stay tuned. We'll be back with more. Hi, thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. Joining us now is the MP of Gopeng and former Deputy Health Minister, Dr. Lee Boon Chye. Dr. Lee, thank you for being on the show tonight. Yep. Historically, the Health Ministry has not been seen as a senior ministerial position within the cabinet. But during a public health crisis, this position, the position of health minister, is arguably one of the most important positions right now. What do you think we need in a health minister?
But I think, as what you have said earlier, public health is of utmost importance because of the COVID. Not just health, but also economic. How well we manage COVID will actually impact on health, on education, and a lot of other sectors. So I think we need a capable health minister to handle the public health crisis And hopefully that should be the prerequisite for us to revive the economy.
Dr. Lee, there's been a lot of criticism because of the former health minister and evidence of maybe the lack of confidence in his abilities was the fact that Khairi Jamaluddin from Mosti was made minister in charge of vaccination, of the vaccination program, the immunization, national immunization program. But I wonder, there's also been criticism of the Director General of Health. And I wonder if you share in that criticism that he also has failed and whether a shake-up in the ministry level must also include a change in the Director General of Health.
I think if you look at the past 1.5 years, the management of the pandemic was fantastic to begin with during the first 3 months. But unfortunately, when the subsequent wave came in, I think sort of went out of control. One of the crucial problems was because even though we are facing a pandemic, there wasn't any increased resources, either human resources or any other resources needed to face the pandemic. Just take for an example, you know, we are supposed to have additional 10 to 12,000 additional health personnel, which has been approved. But I don't think until now, any of these posts has been filled up. And this is part of the contributing factor to the failure in controlling the pandemic. But I don't think by just changing of guard, it probably won't change much. Most important thing is the Prime Minister must be committed to control COVID. You cannot control COVID with the existing pool of personnel. You need additional personnel to do contact tracing subsequently. And having said that, I must congratulate the vaccine team, which has done fairly well, even though more needs to be done, can be done. But I think going forward, vaccination should be the priority. There are still about 4.4 million population who are registered, not vaccinated, about 3.3 million adult population who are not registered. So the focus should be on this 7.7 million population.
Dr. Lee, can I ask you, someone in the role of health minister, would he or she need to have a medical background?
Can you repeat?
Would someone in the position of health minister require a background in medicine?
Not necessarily so. I think, but of course, they need some. They must be able to communicate issues well. I think if you just look at previous health ministers, there are health ministers who are non-medical who could communicate with the riot well, and they did a good job. Certainly, a doctor, a medical background helps when dealing with the pandemic. And I do hope that preferably it should be a doctor who is leading the health ministry.
Dr. Lee, do you see anybody across the aisle in Parliament who could fill that role? The former health minister was, in fact, a doctor. I mean, we're told that. Do you see anybody else who could take that position?
Well, I think certainly there are a sufficient pool of capable person, MPs, who are able to take up the post of health ministry, including Yang Berhormat Khairi Jamaluddin, including Dr. Abdul Latif. And if need be, I think the PM should even consider people outside of the political circle, including public health experts who are in outside of the political party. And I think this should be good because we need a professional to lead the ministry.
You said a little earlier that the Prime Minister must prioritise COVID-19 going forward, even if there are the same faces within this cabinet. And I'm just wondering what you would like to see this incoming administration prioritise, and where the shifts should be at. So the shifts in terms of pandemic management, where you would like to see those shifts.
Well, I think the focus has been on vaccine, which is good, but has to be expedited because, as I said earlier, there were 7.7 million population who are not, adult population who are not vaccinated until now. And there's also a need for early decision about those children, 12 to 17 years old, whether we are prepared to vaccinate them or not, because this will go hand in hand with policy on school reopening. If you are planning to vaccinate this group of children, it might be better to vaccinate them before we reopen the school so that the risk to the children will be minimized. So that's on vaccination. And the existing program about vaccination got to be a bit more proactive because there are still certain community which are not reachable, including Orang Asli. We have cluster of Orang Asli which are having COVID now. So these are places where the MOH should go out and reach out to them and vaccinate them. That's on vaccine. On the other part, we also know that the pandemic is going to be lasting for another one and a half years. And there's a need to strengthen the public health so that we can handle occasional outbreak when it happens. So there's a need to increase the number of personnel in public health, not just on treatment, but also on prevention. So one of the priority, please sort out the contract doctor issue immediately.
Well said. Thank you so much. That was former Deputy Minister of Health, Dr. Lee Boon Chye, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.